So, Dr. Gilligan, I'm telling you, this intriguing information that you've been sharing with us has to do with something that you explain as being a part of a biopsychosocial aspect of violence. Could you explain to us what that's about?
Yes. When I was in medical school, I was taught that all human diseases are caused by the interaction between biological and psychological and social factors. And that is certainly true about, I'd say, about violent behavior as well. What I mean by that in medicine would be, let's say, it's tuberculosis. We know there are biological causes, like the tubercle bacillus that causes it, but there are also and other biological causes, like heredity that makes people more vulnerable to getting sick when they're exposed to it, the tubercle bacillus. But there are psychological factors as well that can just determine whether they're going to get sick or not, whether they're alcoholics or drug addicts or have those kinds of problems, or just don't take care of themselves. And there are social factors. If they're poor and they live in overcrowded circumstances and they don't have good access to medical care because they're too poor to pay for it and so forth, all of those things affect whether people get sick from a physical disease. But with violence, that's especially important. Violence, I use the term violence to refer to a human being injuring a human being. That's what I mean by violence. And I usually use it to refer to the term physical violence, but I'll also talk about psychological violence in just a moment, which can be just as deadly. But in terms of the biological causes of violence, there's a remarkable study that was done in New Zealand discovering, well, what they did was to follow about 1,000 newborn babies up to adulthood over, 20-year period. And what they found is they could identify a particular genetic mutation, biological, factor in their genes that could predict which people were going to become violent as adults of these children and which ones didn't. However, that mutant gene did not have this effect unless the individual had also suffered extremely severe child abuse. It required the combination of child abuse and the genetic abnormality before the person would become violent as an adult. What they found is that the people with the genetic mutation who had not been exposed to severe child abuse were no more violent than anybody else. In fact, they were slightly less violent than people with normal genes. So we know that the biological mutation made them more vulnerable to the effects of child abuse, but in and of itself, it did not cause the violence. The child abuse had to be there also. And I think of that as a sort of among the psychological causes, because child abuse, for one thing, is the most shaming and humiliating experience that a child can have. As I said, you're not loved when you're abused. Mm-hmm. And shame is the absence of love or a deficiency of love for the self. Shame is the opposite of pride, which simply means self-love or self-esteem.
And so when these children with the predisposition, that genetic mutation, were exposed to, subjected to child abuse, did you then find, according to the study, that they tended then to be more violent than people who experienced child abuse but did not have the genetic mutation?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, both factors played a role. They both had a causal, they made a causal contribution. Now, one way of thinking about this is to say simply that violence, like all human behavior, it's multi-determined. That is, there's more than one cause. There are biological causes and there are psychological causes. such as being having an individual life history of being shamed and humiliated from childhood on. And finally, there are social causes. We know that, well, for example, I've been able to, and many other researchers have been able to show that being exposed to poverty, or particularly relative poverty, economic inequality, or experiencing unemployment, being fired from a job, or being treated as inferior, things like racial prejudice, that, you know, all of these things have the effect of shaming people who are subjected to them. And, you know, anybody responds to shame with a reduction in self-esteem. And I'd say the one of the most common defenses against that is using violence as a way of trying to reassert one's power and so forth. So we find that, for example, I found that in the United States, since we have more than a century's worth of data going back to 1900, when we first started measuring death rates every year in America, what we find is that rates of both homicide and suicide increase when the unemployment rate goes up.
Interesting.
And when the duration of unemployment goes up, and people are unemployed for a longer period of time. And rates of suicide and homicide both decrease when the unemployment rate goes down. And that's been true throughout the 20th century. What was also interesting, as a thinking of this as a matter of whether there are social causes of violence, the unemployment rate since 1900 and the duration of unemployment have both increased during every single Republican administration since 1900, and have decreased during every single Democratic administration since 1900. So that we could say that partisan politics is among the factors that will either cause or prevent lethal violence in America.
So if we study this, and you as researchers have probably done this already, we look at the comparison between Republican administrations and Democratic administrations. I know I've read before that, generally speaking, the economy does better under Democratic administrations, and investments do better under Democratic president or administrations. And
That's
you're
correct.
Saying with this whole issue of suicide and homicide, we can make a comparison and we'll see that, at least generally speaking, if not just in absolute terms, homicide and suicide go up under Republican administrations and come down under Democratic administrations.
Yes, and these factors, I've studied them up one side and down the other. The statistics are just extraordinary. I mean, there's no way that this is simply a coincidence, or because it's been repeated, as I said, whenever there's a Republican administration or a Democratic administration. I've put this in charts and graphs and done the statistical tests, and the results are just, they're far beyond anything that could happen by coincidence. One thing that I think is important to emphasize, though, is that I spoke of shame and humiliation as necessary causes of violence, but I want to point out why they're not sufficient, that other causes need to be present before shaming will lead to violence.
Wow.
Maybe we can talk about that.
Please. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, please stay with us. I shared with you from the beginning that the hope was that we would all gain a better understanding and a deeper appreciation for what goes on in the world of the violent. And you're finding out that there is much more to it than just attitude. There's something going on often behind the scenes as well as within the people. who find themselves caught up in worlds of violence. Let's find out more about this. And, you know, I often encourage you, let's approach each of these discussions with integrity and with courage. So don't be offended. Don't allow yourselves to be upset if the facts begin to reveal things that may make you uncomfortable. We'll be right back.